first speaker, Bill E. from Montgomery County.
Hi, my name is Bill E. I'm an addict. I've been giving this a lot of thought since I was asked to speak at this meeting, and it seems like a simple concept, the idea of living just for today. They told me when I got here that this program was simple, but it wasn't necessarily easy. And I learned that in spades as far as the concept of just for today is concerned, because when I got here, my normal mode of living was spent a lot of time regretting the past, a lot of time regretting the past, wishing things were different, wishing I'd done different things, made different decisions, spent a lot of time worrying about the future. The fact of the matter is that none of us really have any choice about when we live. We live right now, right here and now. That's it. I mean, this is what we got. We've got right here and now. For me, though, the process has been learning how to be in the moment that I'm living in, rather than spending this time while I'm breathing in this moment, either in the past or in the future. And it took a long time. Most of the time, before I got here, I would just put off my life until things either got unmanageable, things that started off being maybe an inconvenience turned into a disaster, or putting things off until the opportunity passed me by. And what it did is it created a situation where a lot of negative stuff in my life had a chance to accumulate and build up to the point where it got really hard to deal with. And all that good stuff, all those opportunities I had, they just kept passing me by. I was too afraid to do anything positive, and I was pretty much too lazy to do anything about the negative stuff. So I ended up with stuff like... I ended up with a life full of regrets and fear of the future. I remember I was living in a house in a basement. I liked living in the basement. It was kind of dark. My housemates didn't come down there too much. The longer I lived there, the less they came down. When I moved out of that place, I had gotten into this habit of when I was eating something or drinking something, I just like sort of toss it next to my bed. And I had like, when I moved out of that house and I had to clean up that unmanageable mess that I had created, it was like 8 30-gallon garbage bags full of trash next to my bed. And that's the way I lived before I got here. And believe me, getting clean didn't make that change magically overnight. But that's what I'm talking about this thing about just not being in the moment and not doing what I need to do right now to take care of myself. When I got clean, I found this book, and I can't find it. I've looked around for it a couple of times in my house, and it was a book of recovery cartoons. And there was one that really stuck in my mind. I remember it to this day. It was a picture of a woman sitting at a table, wringing her hands, and she had this really worried look on her face. And the caption was, "Sure, everything's fine now, but what about the year 2010? And that was how I lived, you know? I mean, I was always in fear of the future. I didn't have any opportunity to enjoy the moment because I was too busy worrying about the future and regretting the past and wishing that I'd done things differently. But it still didn't change overnight. When I had about 2 years clean, I met this fella who was a homeless guy, lived in my neighborhood, and his name was Ralph. Ralph was, to hear him tell it, Ralph was a master carpenter, spoke five languages fluently. Most of the time that I saw him, he had pretty much trouble with English, let alone any of the other languages. But Ralph couldn't stop using. And in one of my very first experiences with that kind of 12-step work, another fellow and I offered to take him to a detox. We actually managed to get him to the detox and signed in once, but then he walked out. And he always said he would be ready tomorrow. He always said that he just needed to talk to this person and get things squared away at this place, and then he'd call me tomorrow because he'd be ready tomorrow. So I started calling him just for tomorrow, Ralph. And this fella that I had done this 12-step work with, when he celebrated his second anniversary, he asked me to speak at his anniversary, and I went to speak at his anniversary, and I mentioned this story, which I don't talk about too often anymore. And a woman came up to me after the meeting, and she said, "I know the guy you're talking about. He died about 6 months ago in a van in D.C. Still waiting for tomorrow." And I learned a little bit more about how important it is for me to live just for today instead of spending all my time in the past or the future. Have my little crib notes here. I've been working on this. My memory is not what it used to be. When I had a few years clean, I guess it was about 5 years clean, my mother had a stroke. And I only have one sibling, and she lives in Europe. And it fell to me to take care of my mother. And she would have episodes where she'd get a little bit better, and then she'd have a crisis, and she'd come back worse, and she'd never be quite as good as she was before the crisis. And it was a series of these things. And I was taking her to the doctors, and I was taking her to the hospital, and I was making arrangements for home health aides and paying her bills and taking care of her health insurance and all the time working and trying to, you know, keep my life together as well. And I asked the doctors, what's the prognosis? And they said she could live 5 weeks or 5 years. We have no idea. And I learned a lot about living just for today then, because I realized that I had a responsibility here that I was going to have for however long it took. And I was just going to have to summon up whatever strength it took to do that on a daily basis. And if I started thinking about how long is this going to last, if I started projecting into the future about it, I wasn't going to be able to handle it. I wasn't going to be able to make it. So I learned, that's when I really, really started learning about living just for today. Just every day I had to get up and I had to take care of whatever needed to be taken care of. And in a strange turnaround for somebody who's as self-centered as I am, it often became important for me to put her needs ahead of mine, which is a very difficult thing for me to do, particularly when she'd have a medical emergency and I had to drop what I was doing and make sure she got to the hospital and taken care of. But I learned a lot about living just for today from that experience. And my mother eventually died a few months later, and my business partner was diagnosed with cancer. And it's kind of strange for me to talk about this now because I'm 46 and he died when he was 46. And he lived a whole lot more healthy life than I did. So I kind of feel like I'm kind of living on his time, sort of. He didn't use, didn't smoke, black belt in karate, marathon runner. But he got cancer. And about a year and a half later, it took him. And financial well-being was somewhat dependent on him because we were business partners. And I had to learn a lot about just taking things just for today when all that was going on. And in the course of these two events, the stress of this precipitated the end of my marriage. And I had to live with that too. And there was a lot of fear behind that. You know, I bought a house, I had financial obligations, and all of a sudden, the person that was supposed to share my life emotionally and physically and financially and everything else was leaving. You know, and I didn't know how I was going to manage. And once again, I learned another lesson about just taking care of what needs to be taken care of today. And I look back on all of that stuff now. And I used to have a friend who lived around here. He was a housemate of mine. He used to say, "Worrying works." And he said that because 95% of the stuff he worried about never happened. So worrying works. And I look back and I think to myself, you know, all of the anguish that I went through, worrying about what was going to happen in the future, didn't change what I had to do. You know, and so I really have a choice of how I face my life on a daily basis. I really don't want to just stand up here and talk about the bad stuff, because I could go on and on about the wonderful things, the trips I've taken, the people I've met, the places I've been, the experiences I've had as a result of being in recovery. They're just miracles. Things, you know, it says in the literature that lost dreams reawaken and new ones arise. I got to do stuff since I've been clean that I never believed I'd be able to do. Things that I always wanted to do that I never believed I'd be able to do. And that's also as a result of being willing to show up on a daily basis. Sometimes not wanting to do what I had to do, but doing it anyway, because I got to live just for today. After all of that stuff happened, though, I went to the doctor because I was having some abdominal pains, and I thought I had gallstones, and I did, but I also had something growing on my liver, and they didn't know what it was. And in one of these marvelous events, the way things get timed, I'm a musician. I was driving to a gig on a Thursday night, and I hit a deer at 55 miles an hour and totaled my van. Still made the gig, though, because so I was living in the moment, and I just kind of rolled with it. But the next day, I get a call from the doctor who says, "We need you to come in and have a full blood workup, because we think you might have liver cancer." Totaled car, that's one thing. A totaled car and liver cancer, that's tougher. So I did what I needed to do that day, too, and what I needed to do that day was go into the doctor and have the blood work done. And then I went to a meeting and I talked about it. And the next day, I went to lunch with some friends of mine in recovery. And I was just with them to the best of my ability on that day. And it made me think a lot about, if this is really cancer, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? How are you going to live every day between now and when that takes you? I was lucky enough to find out that it wasn't cancer. I went through a major surgery and a long recovery and a thing where I had to be rehospitalized. But friends in recovery carried me through all that on a daily basis, too. I had to take some serious medication while I was in the hospital. I got to leave the hospital without taking any of it. All of my doctors knew that I was an addict. As a matter of fact, they were tired of hearing about it. But you know what? I have a responsibility to protect my recovery. That's not their job.
Right.
It's my job. So every time somebody pulled out a new piece of paper to write something on, I'd say, "And by the way, I'm a recovering addict. Write that down." I wanted it on every piece of paper. People in recovery carried me through that too. And once again, I feel like I've been given this gift. You know, what am I going to do with my life? You know, I dodged a bullet again. What am I going to do with my life? Um, There's a word that always strikes me as real funny when I hear people use it in meetings, and it doesn't, I don't think it's funny, ha-ha, it actually frightens me, because I usually hear newcomers use it. And they say, I'm never going to use again. And I thought about that, and to me, never is probably the shortest period of time in an addict's vocabulary. I can't remember how many times I woke up in the morning saying, I'm never going to do that again. And by that night, you know, I was saying, this time it's going to be different. I think never is kind of the opposite of just for today. But you know what? The truth is that living just for today is a lot easier now that I've done some step work. It was one of the reasons that it was hard for me to live just for today when I was new was because I didn't have a foundation of step work behind me. By the time I had done my eighth and ninth steps, the whole thing about regretting the past was pretty much gone. That's not to say that I don't look back on things every once in a while and wonder what might have happened if I'd done things differently. But you know, what might have happened is I might have wound up dead. And I'm not dead, and I'm real grateful for that. You know, it doesn't make much sense to second-guess the past. And also as a result of the step work, the life I live now, I believe, is more in line with what my higher power has in mind for me. And what that helps do is it helps really reduce my worry about the future. I still make plans, you know. I do things I really never thought I'd do, like put money in a retirement plan and stuff like that. But I don't spend all my time just preparing for the future and leaving the moment pass me by. And I have my own little list of just for today. I've memorized the reading that we do in some of the meetings of just for today because it's short and it's not that hard to memorize. But I have my own list, and I'm going to read this to you, and then I'm going to close. And this changes, too. My list, just for today, list changes as I grow and change in recovery. But for right now, just for today, I'm going to try to make an effort to pray and meditate and work and play some, too. Just for today, I'm going to try to connect with another addict. Just for today. You know, maybe tomorrow I'm not going to want to talk to anybody, but just for today I'm going to try to connect with another addict. And the flip side of that is just for today, I'm not going to try to do this by myself. And that's something that I really wanted to do when I first got here. When I first got here, I went to a meeting where they had all the IPs out on the table. That's information pamphlets for those of you who don't know NA speak. And the first one I was attracted to was the one called The Loner, Staying Clean in Isolation. I was like, yeah, that's for me. I'm an isolator. I want to stay clean by myself. But that's not what that one's about. If you've ever read it, it's about, like, you know, if you're stationed on a desert island or something and how to stay in contact with addicts who aren't physically where you are. So I was real disappointed to find out that wasn't really about me. That's the way I wanted it to be. Just for today, I'll try to be flexible and take things in stride. This is a big deal for me because I have a tendency to make plans, and if plans don't work out, now it doesn't rock my world. It used to be like it could ruin my day or my week if things didn't work out the way I'd planned them to work out. Nowadays, and it's just a result of the program and kind of living through this thing, nowadays there's a lot of stuff that would have ruined my day when I was new in recovery that just sort of like inconveniences now. Things like wrecking the van when you run into a deer, you know, stuff like that. Lost a few other cars since then, too, for unusual reasons, like when my transmission caught on fire. I was on the way to a gig. I made the gig, too. The van was sitting on the side of the road on fire, but I made the gig. That you know, that's living just for today for me, that kind of stuff. Just for today, I'll try to be true to myself. Try to live with some integrity. But at the same time, recognize the fact that Everybody else has their own truth, their own sense of integrity too, and it doesn't have to be the same as mine. I can let you be who you want to be. And this is the most important one. It was the most important one when I first got here. It's the most important one now. And I think as long as it's the most important one, I'll probably be okay. Just for today, I will not pick up, no matter what. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Bill, and our second speaker is Joe.
Hello, everybody. My name is Joe, and I'm a dope fan.
What's up, Joe?
And I was really hoping that Bill was going to speak a little longer, right? And I am nervous. I first want to thank the committee for asking me to speak. I want to thank y'all for being. I want to thank my higher power, because without my higher power, it would be no me. And without y'all, with my higher power works through, it wouldn't be no me. I want to share this because, you know, when the committee called me, you know how you're running through your mind. I mean, what am I going to talk about? You know, what should I share about? You know, and the committee asked me a couple questions about me. You know, and I explained a little bit of my history on the phone right quick, and he said, I know what you need to do, because he was talking about doing one of the steps. And then when I told him my history, he said, you need to do just for today. You know, and I said to myself, if I talk about just for today, I need to keep it simple. And I need to keep it about my experience, my strength, and my hope when it relates to just for today. I introduced myself, and I want to say this too. I introduced myself as Joe Adolphine. And I want to explain that just a little before I go any further. Because for me, I have to reiterate on that. For me, I do. For a long time, I got caught up in word semantics. I really did. You know, I can recall being in the VA hospital and relapsing and coming in and out. And people used to always tell me, Joe, you got the answers. You know what to do. You know, and a person like me who is so arrogant should never tell me that I got the answers. Because, see, I'll take that and I'll run with it. You know what I mean? And the key issue right there, if I had the answers, I wouldn't keep coming back. That's real simple. If I had the answers, I wouldn't keep relapsing. So there's something missing if I had the answers. Another thing, the reason why I say that is because, see, I've been around the world long enough to know that a lot of people tend to use word semantics when it comes to, and I like to talk about this because, you know, if people in my neighborhood steal, they call thieves. But if the people on the other side of town steal, it's called embezzlement. See the difference there? And if people on the other side of town cheat on their husbands, it's called them having an affair. But if you do it in my neighborhood, it's called cheating. All right? And for me, I have to keep it real simple. Because, see, I can make my disease sound a lot less worse than it really is. Because I'm going to tell you straight up and down that if you give me any dope, any mood-altering drug, and I'm going to do what a dope fiend does. I'm going to steal from you. I'm going to beg, borrow, panhandle, solicit. You understand what I'm saying? And I will do it. I have no cut card. When it comes to me, the sky's the limit. You know, so I keep that in front of me. And that's what I do for me. What somebody else does for them is well and good. Talking about just for today, again, I was sitting there and I was thinking, you know, I really related back to my childhood. And I never, ever wanted to live in today. I was young and wanted to be old. My birthday was Wednesday. I turned 40. and I want to be back 21. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm in reality now. I'm sorry, you know. But I really, you know, and that's how I've always been. You know, always into tomorrow. You know, and then the funny part about it, I always share this because the fact is, it's me and it's real and I keep it in front of me. I reflect. I've been in 12 treatment programs. And I'm not even counting the outpatient program that the government put me in, which didn't work. You know, on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays, we had outpatient over in Crystal City. And on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday was the days that I got high. You know what I mean? And me and the guy that I rode with always stopped at the store after we left outpatient. You know what I'm saying? And I was thinking about it, and the first program I went in, it was a 28-day program, and it was one of those educational kind of programs. You know, we had books, and we had classes, and it was real nice. You know, we used to have crab imperial and filet mignon. You know, we were living large. You know, in the evening, they brought a cold cut tray through, and you know, you slap a little ham on and a little bologna and turkey and throw some of that provolone cheese on there, man. And you know, we sat back, we had a ball, we had a stereo, and you know, all them kind of things, right? And I really thought that I was ready. You know, I went through the process, but I had a reservation. And see, that's another thing. When I think about just for today, I think about back when, and I remember reservations. See, if I got a reservation, that means I done reserved something. That's in the future. So I'm not in today when I got a reservation for the future. You know, someday I'm thinking to myself, I can go back and I can do just one. You know, somewhere down the line, because, you know, back during the day, we used to shoot that ball. We shoot a whole court. And the stuff come up out our pores, man, and we think we was a virgin again. We thought we was a, you know, a cucumber one more time. And reality was, that was just another myth. That was just another one of those negative things that we used to hang on to as you might say, the hood people. First program, went into a few after that, and what happened was, my people told me I need to go into a long-term treatment program. And I just wasn't with that. Man, I was counting 18 months, and 18 months just seemed like a lifetime. When I went in my first program, I must have been around 22 or 23 years old. You know, and I had just started living, man, and I just couldn't see myself going into 18 months. I had a wife, you know, and I said, man, if I go that long, man, somebody going to take me. You know, somebody gonna go up in, you know, somebody gonna tamper, you know what I'm saying? And I couldn't handle that. You know, I just wasn't with that, you know. And then I got a problem too, that I thought I was gonna miss something. You know, I'd be gone all that time. I'm gonna miss something. And I was concerned about what I was gonna miss, not what I was gonna gain. You know, and I struggled for a long time with that 18-month thing, and went into 28-day programs and 28-day programs and 28-day programs. And lo and behold, I finally went into a long-term treatment program and absconded the saving relationship, just to share that. Oh, yeah, I had to, and I did save it for about that long. Because I found out also that they used to have a thing called SLIP, just like HALT. You use the acronyms, I believe they call them, the initials. And SLIP was sobriety loses its priority. That's how they explained it to me. And most of the time, whatever I put before my sobriety is usually the first thing I lose. So I had put job, wife, family, and all those things, as soon as I relapsed, was the first thing that I usually lost. You know, and that's, you know, that's something real cut and dry. I don't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. But for a person like me, right over my head. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, and I was thinking also while I was about my experience again, how the compulsion and the obsession, I could never concentrate on the day. You know, I'm one of them kind of ones that couldn't sleep at night. I got insomnia still today. And I couldn't go to sleep because I was thinking about the next day. I wanted to know where that next hit was going to come from. You know, and all during the day, when I wake up, my concentration is beyond the present. You know, how I'm going to do it, who I'm going to get, how I'm going to get back to do this. Mind always racing, you know. Lo and behold, somewhere down the line, that compulsion and obsession was lifted from me. Thank God. I don't know the date. I really don't know the time. But it was lifted, thank God. Because that's the thing I struggle with the most. Even when I'm a truck driver as a profession. And one of the reasons why I struggle so much with just for today is because I've almost gotten high in almost every area and strip in the Washington, D.C., Maryland area. It ain't too many of them that got past me. And I used to drive, and I used to have that little, you know, the devil on one side and the angel on the other. And I don't know why, but it seemed like the devil always had the louder voice. And I used to always hear him much better. And the thing, reason why, is because I used to always think back and glamorize. I used to glamorize. Again, not concentrating on just for today. I'm still thinking about how I used to be. You know what I mean? And it reminds me a great deal of one of the street corners. Or for those who've been down the country. You know, down Lord and Aquan, them nice places like that. Most of the time you go there and there, somebody always talking about what they had or what they're going to do when they get out. You know what I mean? Hey, you remember back, man, in 1970, when we were riding down, we had them, you know, we was like that, you know what I mean? Oh, shorty, when I get out, man, you know, for real, man, we gonna do this thing, man, because see, I got the, you know, I'm seriously, man, I know what I did wrong. Got this thing. We're gonna do this thing here. You know, never living for the day. You know, this program is real simple. You know, I never understood, excuse me, how simple this program really was. Me being an intellectual, let me say that again. Me being an intellectual, thank you, you're so kind. I want to say one of them Richard Pryor jokes like he ain't, you know. Yeah, but I'm going to leave it alone, right? Anyway, lost my train of thought that time. Oh, intellectual. Outthinking myself. I always felt as though this thing called recovery was something tangible. I'm always looking on logic. You know, my thing is always real simple. It's even black or white. I don't look at a gray area. Very seldom do I look at a gray area. See, either it is or it ain't. You know, and two and two is supposed to add up to four. You know, and for some odd reason, I've come to the conclusion that everything is not like that. You know, life is not always with answers. You know, there's a whole lot of questions just, you know, that's just like it's a life after death. You know what I mean? I'm like everybody else is. I'd rather believe in God and find out it ain't a God than not to believe in God and then find out it is a God. That's right. You know what I'm saying? You know, real, you know. But you know, this thing, for a long time, I went in and out of VA hospital psychiatric ward. And that has a great deal to do with Just for Today, because me going in and out of all the treatment programs I went in and being a patient on the psych ward, and I want you to share that I was on the psych ward, and not because I was, okay, well, let me rephrase that. Because I was getting ready to say that I wasn't insane, right? You know, I really was getting ready to go there, right? Well, I'm going to go ahead and slow up on that one. Because I got some people in here that know who I am, right? And they said they're going to sit on the front row to keep me honest. So, you know, I'm going to leave that alone. Now, I went on the psych ward, and I used to tell them people that I was hearing voices. And that I was homicidal and suicidal. And that was a trick that I learned while I was going in and out of the VA hospital treatment program. I found out a couple of guys didn't have to go to all these meetings and get a slip sign. They would go through, they would go to the psych ward and then come into the treatment program. And you know, me being interested, I would have asked them, excuse me, how did you do that? You know, how was you able to get around the meetings and get straight in here? And they told me, all you got to do is act crazy. So I had a master plan. I went down there and started beating my head against the wall while the doctor was talking to me. For me, that was the definition of being crazy. You know, and I would do that, and he said, hold on for a minute, I'll be right back. And he went out and came back, and he told me, we don't have any bed space. I said, wait a minute. They said, if you act crazy, you can get yourself a room, right? And what I did was I went and I did some more investigating, and I came to a conclusion that it was the homicidal, suicidal, hearing voices thing. So I didn't try to beat my head against the wall no more, all right? And I went in there and I used that, but see, then what they wanted a story. They wanted to know what the voices was telling me. They wanted to know what gender the voices were. And a whole bunch of stuff. And I had to tell this doctor in emergency. And then I had to go to admittance and tell this doctor. Then when I got on the ward, I had to tell the nurse. And then the nurse sent a doctor, and I had to tell him. And I just got tired of talking. You know, but I did what a good dope fiend does. And I did what was necessary to have a room and a hot meal. Because my parents got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And see, again, back to Just for Today, I use my family. I use my family because I always thought, and I'm leading up to it because the fact is, the reason why I was on these psych wards was because I always thought that there was going to be a tomorrow. My thing was, I was putting off for tomorrow what I need to do today. You know, I always thought that those treatment programs were going to always be there. I thought my parents would always be there. Now, the women, and I'm going to say it like I heard a tape, because I got a lot of recovery tapes I listen to, and a guy talks about his family escaping. Well, my wife and my girlfriends, they escaped, you know. So that tells you that I was holding them hostage. Parents, they held on, you know what I mean? And they only held on as long as they could. But again, me not concentrating on what I needed to do today, I kept on hoping that these programs would always be there. Lo and behold, they started eliminating treatment programs for veterans. I didn't have no health insurance by this time. So what I had to do is I had to rely on programs that were funded. Then what ended up happening, they started eliminating the psych wards. We had three nice psych wards, you know. I think we had two on the second floor and one up on the third, you know. Then we had an experimental ward. And I'm going to tell you how crazy I am. I just love talking about this. And I'm going there with y'all for just for the day. Please don't think I'm going nowhere. But they used to have an experimental ward. So I knew if I did a good month or two on the psych ward, they would give me at least a month or two on the experimental ward. So I had some real good time out of that, you know, environment out there, out of that terrain. And I had some kind of haven, some safe haven. But only thing is, see, I was taking Haldol. I was taking Prolixin, Risperidol. And then it got so bad that one time I remember sitting in the front row of the meeting, because they used to bring meetings on the ward. And just like Bill sitting here now, and I'm sitting there. I said, hey, what'd you say? Now remember, I ain't hear no voices. But the medication had me hearing voices. And I knew there was something going on. That's how bad it had me. My father used to come up to the psych ward and he used to see me. And I used to have involuntary body movements. And I used to drool. And I was real sluggish. Now we're talking about a person that didn't need this kind of medication. And this is what I was doing. In my mind, it was a survival skill. You know, my mother, she just wouldn't even look at me. She wouldn't even come up there and visit me. But my father couldn't let go. You know what I'm saying? He was the one that stuck with me through thick and thin. Because he always said I had potential. You know what I'm saying? He used to always tell me, he used to say, you know, you're a real nice guy. Everybody really likes you. But when you start using that stuff, don't nobody want to be around you. You know what I mean? And that's how it was. It got so bad at the end that I didn't even care about my hygiene. You know, and I was a straight up, I would steal the socks off your, I really would. Don't leave the keys in your car. It was gonna be rented out before the evening was over with. You know, but again, these are the things that I did, you know, and one time they tried to give me some stuff for depression, because I was a real depressed, angry kind of guy. You know, I really didn't like living reality. I didn't like to feel at all. And we're talking about the present. We're talking about for right now, and I ain't talking about today, but I'm talking about then, in the present, I didn't want to feel. If I couldn't use, I would sleep to escape reality. I slept 17 hours a day. 17 hours a day. If I could not use to escape reality and stop feeling, I would sleep. When I was on the VA hospital psych ward, the nurses would come through there and say, please get out of the bed, Mr. Proctor. And you know how they got the mattresses that got the plastic on it, and your sheets be all sliding off, you know, and you be sweating, you know, because anyhow, when you're detoxifying, you're going to sweat anyway. You know, and I'd be stinking. You know, they said, Mr. Proctor, will you please get in the shower? You know what I mean? I take the covers and pull it on my head. You know, leave me alone. You know, and I'm just talking about being completely depressed. Now, I thought about it. I said, well, why was I depressed? And I came to a conclusion that I was depressed because I had lost so much. So, okay, we're talking about the past, what I lost. And I was so depressed because I couldn't get what I wanted fast enough. All right? Because, see, I want everything yesterday. I want immediate gratification. See, I want to get right out of treatment. I want you to listen to me now. I want to step right out of treatment, 28 days. You know what I'm saying? Microwave. That high-tech recovery. You know what I'm talking about. I want to step out and I want the limousine out there to pick me up. I want the good woman, the good job, and the brand new home. Now check this out. The new job got to give me a 2-week vacation stepping out the door. Okay. That's what I want. See, I want the easiest, softest way. I want something for nothing. My mother used to relate to me. Whenever she used to say the word Joe, she used to always follow it with the word scheming. And I'm trying to think, you know, why you keep saying that, Mom? You know, why you always scheming? And I could not see. My denial was so great that I could not see that I was looking for something for nothing. Always looking for the easiest, softest way. Now, nobody ever said that you got to go out here and get therapeutic jobs coming right out of treatment. But you know something? There's a lot of growth getting therapeutic jobs coming out of treatment. There's a lot of growth going into an Oxford house or going into some kind of a structured living. You know what I'm saying? So I don't knock it. I'm just saying that it ain't the only way you got to get recovery. You know, but you know, just for the day, and I'm just talking about now, you know, God has blessed me. I'm talking about somebody. Let me share this with you. I'm getting ready to go to another level on you. It's my son. It's my son sitting right there. December 3rd, 1990. I had decided that if I was going to feel the same pain that I was feeling that day, if I was going to feel it again tomorrow, that I did not want to live anymore. And I took a 10-inch butcher knife and put 6 inches of it in my chest. And they shipped me to Washington Hospital Center, trauma unit. And amazingly, one of my excuses for using was because I didn't have any children. I said, I don't have anybody as an offspring. I don't have nobody to carry on my name. I'm an only child. And I've always wanted a child. I wanted a son that looked just like me. And I wanted him to be named after me. You know what I'm saying? And I wanted to do the things that me and my father never did. I wanted to be able to do it with my son. See, because I also lived in the illusion that when I was young, I wanted to be Opie and I wanted my father to be Andy Griffith. You know, I wanted me and him to walk down the dirt road and throw a pole over in the water and do some fishing, which me and my father have never done. Only been fishing once in my life. And I used that as an excuse on why I used. Now listen to what I say now. While I was on that trauma unit, I met a lady. And she befriended me. She used to come past my room and she used to ask me, do you want anything from downstairs? You know, the snack bar. And I used to always say no, because I know I ain't had no money. You know, I'm a good dope fiend. Somebody asking me to get me something, I know they ain't give me nothing for free unless they want something from me. So I don't need nothing, but thank you, you know. And so one evening she finally came in there and she sat down and she talked to me about herself and I talked to her about myself. And that young lady befriended me and followed me into an 18-month treatment program after I got out the hospital. And I didn't ask her to follow me. She followed me on her own. She became a secretary of that treatment program's family night. She would pick me up on my requests, and she would give me money per week. And, you know, I don't know. And what ended up happening is she became the mother of my son. And I was listening to Bill earlier talk about regrets. And I'm sorry to say, I got no regrets. Everything that happened to me happened for a reason. I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for what I've been through. I wouldn't have the knowledge. I wouldn't have the growth if it wasn't for where I've been through. Now, can you imagine me stabbing myself? The outcome was the birth of my son. Now, the flip side of that is the day he born, I got drunk. The day he was born, I used. And I questioned myself. I questioned myself on really why are you doing this? You know, and for 3 more years, until he was age 3, I used. But you know something? I'm a strong believer that focus is my primary purpose. It is so hard for me to lose, it's so easy for me to lose focus. For me, I have to have priorities, and they got to be in order. I cannot keep intentionally saying, I'll do it tomorrow. See, I'm the kind of guy, a good friend of mine sitting up here used to share about it too, about them New Year's resolutions. You know what I'm saying? Always New Year's. You know something? Hear my hand. Hand of God, I'm going to stop. January 2nd, I'm off to the races again. And guess what I say? I ain't going to say tomorrow I'll start over again. Or right then I just stop. I say, well, I just wait till New Year's next year. Huh? Because of what? Because I believe tomorrow is promised to me. And I heard what Bill said too, you know, about the mishaps of his partner and things like that. And I've had some deaths. People my age and younger going on away from here. You know, and I ain't proud to say too that sometimes when I lay my head down at night, I lay my head down with all expectations of waking up in the morning. But there's so many. And I even got a better one for you. I wake up in the morning with expectations to live the full day. And reality is, that ain't the way it is. You know, my barber is in the fellowship. And I went through his house this morning, and he's a heck of a guy. But he shared something with me, and it was so profound. He told me, he said, what would you do if you were told that you had 24 hours to live? He said, what would be your number one thing that you would do? I mean, what would you get in order? What would you do? Who would you go see? You know, all these things, what would you do? You know, I'm sitting there picking my brain. Man, whew. You know, what would I do? You know, where would I go? Who would I see? Would I go straight to the church and get on my knees and repent? Or I mean, what would you do? You know, and he came back afterwards, after I'm struggling, I mean mentally masturbating, for real. And he said, the funny thing about it is, tomorrow ain't even promised to you. I'm already, when he tell me what would I do in the 24 hours, I'm already here. When for real, this right here ain't even promised. But that's one more time how I believe I got the power. And in the last year, that's what I've been really, really coming to light. I don't have the power. Lord, I wish I did. I mean, I usually say it. I think because that's there and I pick it up. Tangible again. I'm able to do that. That I got the power. And reality is I don't. God has the power. My higher power has the power. I would like to tell you that these few 24 hours that I've been clean and sober, I would like to tell you that it's my word. But reality is my will tells me to go up on one of them good strips and come up with a master plan that I can sling something and use a little. Sling a lot and use a little. I like that. You know what I mean? And I'm my best customer. Huh? I ain't even gonna tell you about it. Cause you know my story. Y'all just like me. Say what? So my focus today is solely, about me doing the right thing. You know, I would like to sit here and I like to say, you know, that you did so-and-so, so-and to me, so I had the right to do so-and-so, so-and-so to you. And I see it all the time. You know, you made me say that. You know, if you ain't, especially in relationships, you know, if you ain't never do that, I would have never said that to you. You know? And I believe that very strongly on Judgment Day, whenever I go up to them pearly gates, that God is going to judge me, not for what you do to me, but for what I do to you. How long am I going to procrastinate? How long am I going to turn around and say, I'll do it tomorrow? You understand what I'm saying? There's a whole lot of things I see going on. You know, I be in some rooms, and I don't mean to criticize, but reality is I be in the rooms a lot of times, and I see things going on, and people say, oh, well, we dope fiends. Okay, how long are we going to use that excuse? You know, reality is I'm no longer practicing. So how long do I use me being a dope fiend as an excuse on why I ain't doing what I'm supposed to do? For real, for real. You know, I sit around, and don't get me wrong, you know, like I said before, I ain't trying to come here to criticize, but I see so many people up in here, married, sleeping around the fellowship. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm talking about, I know some people who don't have long-term relationships in the fellowship. I'm going to stop smoking tomorrow. I'm gonna stop smoking tomorrow. And this is the one that gets me. I can't stop. Ain't no such word as I can't. It's I won't. You know what I mean? And I'm just talking about some surface stuff here, but I'm going to go to the underlining part to talk about morals. Because for real, the third step says, I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. And that means that I need to stop doing my will and I need to do God's will. It don't take a rocket scientist. And I got a friend of mine that talks about it. I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. But I sure as hell ain't the dullest. It don't take a rocket scientist to figure out what's right and what's wrong. We was taught morals as children. I don't care what neighborhood you, I don't care if you grew up in the hood or if you grew up on our state. You know what morals are. You know what's right and wrong. So if you want to talk about just for today, I'm trying to keep my house in order. Because if my Heavenly Father chooses to take me away from here at this moment, I want to be ready. I swear to God I do. I swear to God I do. I want to be ready. I want to be ready. I do not want to die with my soul stained from something that I said, I'll take care of it tomorrow. I just don't want to go out like that. It'd mean all this stuff that I've been doing was done in vain. The recovery, the struggles, it was done in vain. If he calls me and tells me, I can't accept you. You know what I mean? And I'm just here to let y'all know that I ain't perfect. I'm a long way from being perfect. You know, for real, for real. But I tell you what, on a daily basis, I am doing the best. And I no longer use me being human as an excuse. I think everybody knows what premeditated is. Premeditated means you know what you was doing before you did it. You planned on doing it. So my morals tell me that if I know it's wrong and I do it, then it's premeditated. Humans making mistakes. And when I say make mistakes, I'm talking about tripping over Bill here. Say, excuse me, Bill. I'm sorry. I didn't intentionally do that. Premeditated is intentionally. Now, I'm going to be wrong. And I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up. Gotcha. He doing your number. I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up. My sponsor talks a great deal about being just a pebble of sand in the beach of life. Right? And he says it because it's a humbling practice of some humility in your life kind of thing. And it's okay. But my thing was I was always less than anyway. You know what I mean? I always felt as though I wasn't up to par. And I find out that, yeah, I'm a pebble. I'm no better than nobody. But I keep in front of me that I ain't worse than nobody either. That means I'm just as good as anybody else. You know, because so long I wanted to be just one of the bunch. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to wear my hairdo like another individual. I like the way, and I'm going to share with you. When I was young, I had a guy that I saw, he had a chipped tooth. And I'd be darned if I didn't go home and look in the mirror and try to crack my own tooth. Because I wanted to be, I wanted to be just like him. Because I thought that was cool. So for once in my life, I am somebody. You know, and I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up. I said that a couple times, didn't I? I'm going to say this and I'm going to shut up. I really am. I'm going to say this to anybody in here who is new to this thing. You know what I'm saying? Don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle happened and that you are somebody. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Joe, and thanks, Bill. Thanks to those who shared. Could somebody come up and read the Just for Today, please, that was handed out? I'm sorry.
My name is Darlene, and I'm an addict.
Hi.
Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living, and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Just for today.
Can we circle up here, maybe join, and go out with the serenity prayer? I know we're at the beach and there's a peninsula and all, but...
And NA ought never be organized, that's sure. We can do this.
Okay, let's pause for a moment of silence, followed by the serenity prayer. Who's been clean the longest?
God. Grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Keep coming back.
Works
if you work.
However you want to do it.